Would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Tor Miller.
We've got New York. We've got an iPhone in the mix. We've got NYU in the mix. We've got Brooklyn to New Jersey to another small town to a commute to school. So these are all the things. Now, it doesn't mean we're not going to go back to these, but that's like the revisionist history. What do you want people to really know that's going to either inform them about the music?
A lot of the music, I mean, I bear it all sort of like in the lyric, and I think that everything that you get there, if you were to read the lyric out, is sort of how I feel about my life and the lives of people around me. So I think that I sort of put it out there for everyone. As to, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, but you see, you went there. So that's kind of interesting because you kind of took it further than everybody else does, and we're going to get there. But everybody's like, he's telling New York stories in the same way that Tom Waits told stories about being drunk, right? But let's go there a little bit. It's not that, and I was born in Queens, so I'm a New York boy. But I hear a lot more than just, from what I've heard so far, it's not just New York stories, right? It's more about how you've related to your life, which got you to New York.
I think a lot of it, like when I first started making music as well, I was a pretty lonely kid. And for a couple years when I moved out to New Jersey, I wasn't talking to anyone. So literally my only form of communication, and I didn't speak at my family dinners or anything. So my only form of communication was like music. And so for anyone to sort of get a sense of how I was feeling about anything, it'd be in lyric.
Okay, so let's go a little deeper there, because you know, you're about to go into a world where performance is all and talking to people like me is all. But you said you were lonely. Were you an only child?
Yeah.
I was too. So tell me a little bit about being at the dinner table and not talking. Did your parents look at you and go, oh, our kid's got problems?
Well, I'm not sure if they felt that way, but I think that they sensed that I had a lot of anger and resentment towards them and the whole situation and moving. And so I sort of...
So this was from Manhattan to Jersey. So going from the big city where you were going to have all this culture and all this cool stuff to a farm town where it's like, the cow's mooing now.
Yeah, and my complete outlook and personality morphed to something totally different. I became a completely different person. It was pretty strange.
So where was that exact moment that you turned to your parents and said, look, I'm getting on the bus, I'm going to New York. If you don't do that, you're really going to have trouble on your hands. And I'm not saying you said that, but tell me about that.
Well, so I went to high school and I switched schools in Jersey, and I met a couple guys. I joined a jazz band in school. I met a couple guys and we started this band. And through that, I was going to New York City every weekend playing shows. And we were all...
So you had a legit excuse to get the heck out.
Yeah, and I think that even when we were in a band and we were trying to find the proper band name, everything sort of had to do with this escapism and trying to get back to the city and suburbia and like being sort of uncomfortable in that.
Is New York still your first love as a result? Because you've gotten to travel and, you know, I mean, you've ingrained, and we'll get to at least the songs that we've heard so far. You've ingrained New York in the most obvious of ways, but then combined that with the sense of longing and all of that, right? So what was it? Was it that you were born in Manhattan and it's what you knew, or?
I think that is when I was taken away from it, and then my whole life was a constant struggle to get back there and reconnect with old friends, which I never ended up doing. But I went to NYU, and I was able to get back to that situation. And so it was something that was always on the forefront of my mind and always something I was dying to do.
It's not about ageism, but you're young. So all of this New York that you've gotten into your blood and that you sing about, this is way beyond your years. Yes. So is it been studying the masters? Is it that you did a lot of reading? Where did the New York that is your New York, which is definitely not today's New York, get into you and those songs?
I read a lot of books, a lot of documentaries, a lot of biographies about artists like Patti Smith, and I read a whole what's the name of that Legs McNeil book?
Oh yeah,
The Oral History of Punk Rock.
Yes.
And I started reading about all these things, and I read about CBGB and everything, and so that was what I was referring to, and sort of a longing. So the song has a lot of meanings, but I think one bit of it was longing for that period, and that was the New York I definitely had in my mind as I wrote it.
I know the tale of that that you were given records to listen to and all of that, but you know, the Jeff Buckleys of the world. What was your entry point to it?
To Jeff Buckley and those type of people. I had a music teacher in New Jersey who started turning me on to a bunch of different types of styles and artists as I progressed as a songwriter. And Grace came up that record and he showed me. And then as I grew up, I started listening to the Shanae tapes and stuff and some of his live things and immersed myself in that. So from friends and teachers and whatnot.
How far are you into your 2-year leave, in quotes, from NYU?
I think that I have just used it all up. I should check
So is your meter up now?
I think so, yeah. I have to check my school email. I haven't done that in a year. So I think I'm out. I think I'm officially dropped.
I mean, people spend so much time on, well, you know, you got into NYU and you got into the Clive Davis School and it's the modern thing and it's a dream come true. How could you not go back?
Going to Clive was always a compromise between my parents and I. When I was about to graduate high school, I wanted to be a professional musician, desperately. And I had no solid ground with that argument, and both my parents being lawyers, you know, you need to...
Ah, I didn't know that. Oh my gosh, you had a negotiation factor there.
Yeah, exactly. And so I had no argument. And so we compromised. I went to music school. And then throughout that whole process, I was writing constantly and playing out. And I got the record deal and I had something to stand behind.
Who basically discovered you first? And we'll go with the Zane Lowe story is well told. That was it a producer of his that heard you on SoundCloud?
Yeah, my manager sent it in to the programmer for Zane Lowe. And I was in a band as a kid. I was 17. A family friend of mine, who's also my other manager, sent my my demo out to Chris, who's now my manager. And they heard it. They booked me a show in New York City at Pianos. And because Phoenix was going to play Letterman, which is Chris manages Phoenix. And I was in London at the time doing writing sessions and meeting, sort of just meeting people. And I was having dinner after a session, and Chris said, oh, by the way, your Hold the Phone demo just played on Zane Lowe. And then at the time, I didn't know who Zane Lowe was, but I heard it played on BBC Radio 1, and I was amazed. And then I started getting text messages from friends like out here and in L.A. and New York saying, I can't believe it. And, yeah.
Crazy. So now... The Daniel Glass and the Glassnote record story goes like this for almost everybody. It was either him or a good friend called him up or one of his sons heard the artist. So what's the tour story?
My story is I was playing residencies in the city for a while and record labels were coming out. Daniel came to one. He had left a funeral early and came. That's the legend. And I didn't meet him after that show, having that bit of information, I was very confident that maybe we would get an offer or something. And so we didn't hear anything for a really long time. Then Chris, my manager, was backstage with Daniel in Paris at a Phoenix show, and we were looking for a small label to put out a couple singles, like a 7-inch. And so Chris was asking for Daniel's opinion on that. And Daniel said, well, we'll just sign to where everyone at the company loves him, and let's just do it. So Chris knew that Daniel's a man of his word, and he's very old school, so he shook his hand as quickly as he could, and that was the deal.
So you've got this great quote that I'm paraphrasing, which basically is that you spent 4 months in various co-writing situations, and that by the end of that, you were just ready to say, okay, enough of this. The co-writing thing, right? It's the thing to do, right? Let's see how many people we can pair a new artist with and see what sticks and see what's gonna be the hit and see what's gonna be the style. So the co-writing, how was that precipitated?
Well, for myself, and I was so young when we started making this record and working on it and the EP and everything. And it was a bit of a learning experience and seeing how the tricks to the trade and how people view things and what you like, and if you meet someone along the way that it really works with. And through this whole process, I met a guy named John Green who's co-producing the album, and we've written some of my best songs together. And
you had to kiss a lot of frogs.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean a lot of traveling, and it's kind of soul crushing. To a certain extent, because you travel around, you meet a new person every day, and you have the same conversation with a different face, and then you have to make this piece of art, and it's all set in a very short amount of time, and then you're on to the next city, going somewhere else, and meeting some new person, talking about the same thing again.
And all you're just trying to do is kind of pour out your soul and get some more kind of gestalt on what that's going to be, right?
Yeah. And so I found that towards the end of it, I was getting so tired of the whole experience. And that's not to say I regret doing it, because I really loved it and it made me a much stronger writer. But I think for future reference, I'll work with John Green and then I'll work on my own. I've learned so much. I've become so much better, and I don't regret a single thing. And all the songs on the album I'm very proud of. So it's been really cool.
Let's do this. UK versus US audiences. You have a real affection in addition to New York for the UK, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I love them both so much now, and it's tough to pick. As to how crowds are, I think that London and New York are quite comparable, and you have to win them over, and they're not going to give it to you. So you really need to grasp the attention, and then you have them. Once you have them, they're lovely, and they give it all. And I mean, in New York, I had a homecoming show a couple of weeks back on the beginning of this tour, and everyone was just sort of having a fun time together. So it was cool.
Are you performing a lot of the album songs already?
Some of them, yeah. I'm slowly trickling them into the set. I don't want to totally mess myself up.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs on the outside, and then songs by anybody you want to play in between.